Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead. Take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, Ben, what's up, man? How we doing?
Good, doing well. So welcome, Talking Friars podcast and YouTube show. Ben Fadden here with Eric Hosmer. I've had Greg Garcia on before. I've had Tyson Ross. I've had some former Padres, but this one I'm sure is going to be the biggest one. But Haas, just right off the bat, as someone who is a Padres fan, my family has season tickets, I appreciate you so much for coming on here, talking to a Padres fan, because I think during your time with the Padres, some fans thought that, man, he doesn't go on the radio. He's blocking a bunch of Padres fans on social media. I don't know if everyone else agrees, but I respect you so much for coming on here. So thank you so much, just right off the bat.
Ben, I appreciate you, man. Thank you for those words. G-Gar, Tyson, those are some good guys you've had on here as former Padres. It's something fun that I'm getting into now, interacting with a lot of fans on X, a lot of fans on Instagram, and everything we got going with Digging Deep, the podcast, and the Moonball Media side. I'm excited. And, I think a big part of what happened in San Diego, not for just me, but for a lot of other people, really motivated me to get on here and start a player-driven type media for baseball. I feel like baseball space really hadn't gotten there yet.
Yeah, for sure. And that's my first question. Like, what made you want to get into this? Because while you're playing, that's definitely not what I expected, was for Eric Hosmer to go make a show with some other guys after his career. I just was not expecting that at all. But go ahead. Just what made you want to do this?
Yeah, first of all, there's a couple other athletes that I really look up to in basketball and football. And this media side, especially logging on, doing this type of thing, has always been kind of frowned upon amongst baseball guys. You know, if you're going doing stuff like that online, you get to the locker room the next day and the older guys are like, hey man, why are you doing this? Like, well, what are we doing this for? You know, so when I saw guys like Udonis Haslam, who's a basketball player for the Heat, I really look up to, get on, start one. A lot of football guys then started one. I really, really had interest in doing this because I think in a day and age in baseball, I think a lot of the modern fans, modern day, maybe my age, younger than us, I think a lot of baseball fans are looking at some of the wrong stuff. I think as a player now getting into this space, I think I can open the fans' eyes. And from my perspective and my insight, I can kind of get them looking at stuff in a different way, in a different direction. And, you know, there was a couple specific things throughout my career that I really wanted to talk to the fans. I really wanted to speak to the fans and tell them my side of what's happening. And I never really had a platform for that. And, you know, one big one, Ben, I'll share this with you here for your show, and this is a juicy one, so I know you're going to like it. But honestly, the trade deadline, you know, when I got traded and was part of the Soto deal at first, it really left me with just nothing to say. I had no one to talk to, and, you know, I really wanted a platform, something like this, to really share the story and let the fans know fully what's going on, because that was a situation where, you know, I'll give you the details now. So at 8 o'clock in the morning on the day the trade deadline was, I get a call from the front office of the Padres saying, hey, you know, you're going to be involved in a trade. There's a big trade that's happening going to DC. We're getting Juan Soto. The trade's going to have four minor league prospects that go with it. And then, separate from that, there's going to be a pool of three big league players. It's me, Will Myers, and Luke Voit. So what they then say is you have the option to decline this trade because of your contract. You have a no-trade clause. So at that point in time, again, this is like 8 in the morning, I then tell them, hey, listen, this was a really hard part for me too because I have so much respect for the Nationals organization, for Rizzo, for Davey, all those guys over there. And at that point in time, to me, I have a year or two left of my career. I don't feel like I fit the Washington Nationals plans because they're obviously in a rebuild. And that situation for me just didn't work out. The timing to me wasn't there. So back to the trade thing. So it's 8 in the morning. These players are going. The three big league guys are the pool. From 8 till about 1 o'clock when the trade deadline was actually happening, I think there was a big understanding in San Diego that I was the one holding up the whole entire trade, where none of that would have happened. If I then say no and use that trade option, they then select either Luke or Will. Obviously, Will being on the last year of his contract, they're not going to go there because they lose Will at the end of the season. So that is how Luke ended up being a part of that deal. So for me, from 8 o'clock to 1 o'clock, you know, I have obviously a lot of fans in San Diego that are upset because they think I'm the one holding up this whole entire Juan Soto deal. And again, I had nothing I can really say at that point in time. So not only for my situation, really not for my situation at all, I think now moving forward, this is something that I really want to stick up for the players and hope to bring some different insight to fans.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. How tough was that at that deadline where you're talking about that 8 a.m. and you know, like Washington, that's just not where I'm going to be right now. That's just not right for me. What made you, or what happened, let's say, from the Nationals to the Red Sox deal? Was it like pretty quick, or was that like right before? I believe, because I remember getting like the alerts, that was right before pretty much the deadline was when you ended up going to Boston there.
Yeah, it was a very unique, it was a weird situation. Like I said, the DC thing to me just, it just didn't make sense for me where I was at my career. It wasn't appealing to do that. So from that point on, I'm talking to Scott. We're going back and forth, and I expressed to him that what I just told you, it's just not fitting for me right now. DC, yeah, that doesn't make sense. And then Scott was like, hey, man, well, listen, you know, you don't want to lose being an everyday player, because if you don't end up going to DC, we don't know if they can trade you somewhere else. You're going to lose that everyday, being an everyday position player type guy. And that's where I was just telling Scott, listen, I think it's pretty obvious, it's pretty evident that the front office doesn't want me on the team. I think they will trade me at some point in time. And they ended up trading, making the move to Boston. That's kind of how that all went down. But yeah, it got pretty crazy there, because there during the late hours, Scott wanted me to pursue having an everyday job, and I wasn't really feeling going to DC. So at that point in time, I think that's when the Boston play came about. And I honestly found out about Boston on Twitter, and then about 5 minutes later, I get calls from Scott and Haim over in Boston, and that's kind of how it all went down pretty quickly.
So what was your last communication with AJ?
It was that at 8 in the morning when, you know, basically, hey, listen, there's a deal in place. The deal's going to happen no matter what. If you then don't, you know, if you don't use your no trade clause, you're going to go there. If not, we just don't have at bats for you here. It's not going to work. So at that point in time, I felt pretty confident if I didn't go to DC, I was going to get traded somewhere else.
Yeah. So let's go back to, or post career here with your show, and this personality that I'm seeing from Haas and teammates like Greg Garcia on my show, like he has said this, teammates publicly, about you as a teammate and how great of a teammate you are and like a mentor and all that. And I totally understand that. I totally see this through this show. So it's nothing against you personally. I think Padres fans, they have this thought of, why didn't we see this Haas with the Padres? And so could you kind of, you probably have a little bit already here, but could you expand on like, why didn't we see that? It was in the clubhouse, but we didn't really see that. Some bring up, well, we didn't really see him at like community events or anything like that. And I just want to have you have this platform here to tell Padres fans your side on that.
Yeah, definitely. I think the message that fans get now are coming from certain people, and those certain people get that message from certain outlets. And that's how kind of what the fans are seeing. So that was a big thing for me was to let the fans know, you know, what exactly is happening, what is going on. And for me personally, I understand when you're a player, you sign a contract, you have to perform at a certain level. And if you don't, the fans are going to be upset about that. If you're not winning, if you're not doing what you signed on to do, I completely get that. The part that really got me was, you know, I pride myself on being a good teammate. I pride myself on being a good dude. So when I kind of started hearing stuff about, you know, there's a lot of negative stuff that's happening in the clubhouse that I'm causing and I'm the reason behind that, that to me was something that I didn't want that to think that that was true. I think my teammates knew that, but I think the fans didn't really have an opportunity to know that because of the sources they're getting information from. And a good example is last year. You know, there was a big article at the end of the year, and I really do hate to use Kevin Acey as an example because I really do respect and I truly do like Kevin Acey. I think he's a good reporter. He shows up every single day. It's face-to-face. I have nothing but respect for Kevin Acey. So I think last year when that article came out about Manny and not being out there for practice and not preparing caused them to not make the playoffs, essentially it was allegedly that's kind of what he was saying in a fact of what the downfall of the team was that year. To me, that's a part of that is, yes, on Kevin, but at the same time, I think he's getting information from a bad source. So that was another reason for me to get on here and be like, listen, Manny Machado doesn't need to be going out there taking ground balls at 3 o'clock every single day. Manny's the type of guy that needs to be in the training room getting stretched out. Then he goes to the weight room and gets his, you know, his routine going, his warm up and all that type of thing. So that's where I was like, okay, I really want to do this. I have a lot of time. It was May last year. At the end of the month, I get released from Chicago. I call Anthony Saratelli, who's my business partner in all this, and I say, you know, let's really map this out. Let's start doing this because this is something that I want to do. I want to start interacting with fans. I want to start letting this happen. And that's kind of what I've been doing on X lately. It's been that fun kind of banter you have in the locker room with guys. We're watching baseball. We're conversating back and forth. So I've really taken a liking to doing this, and I'm having a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm blocked, so I can't see some of it. But
Not anymore on Instagram. I hit you with the Heisman early, but I unblocked it now. So we're good.
Appreciate that. When you talk about the clubhouse and Manny doing his routine there, I think that's part of it as well. I forget if it was Kevin or whatever source, that doesn't matter, about how, well, sometimes, like Juan, for example, he's off doing his own thing a little bit, and I think that's said about some other guys as well, and how maybe it wasn't the best clubhouse or the best team last year, or not even just last year, but maybe in past years as well. Can you go into, for us publicly, like for players, do they need to be all together as a team? Or because I feel like it's really individualized for players' preparation, and you just go into that. I don't want to keep going on this, but yeah, just your thoughts on the individualism, if that's a word, of the players' preparation before games.
Yeah, the preparation before game, in my opinion, is the players that are older veteran players that have been in the league for a certain amount of years have earned the right, they've established the right to prepare a way they want to prepare. So if one player wants to be on the field all day, if one player wants to be in the training weight room getting ready that day, I think those older players have earned that right. And I think they've earned the right to make their own routine. But at 7 o'clock when the game starts, that's when you have to be a unit. That's when you have to be cohesive, a team. You got to be firing on all cylinders. You got to know where each guy is going to be. That to me is something that has to happen at 7 o'clock. But all the way leading up until then, honestly, if you're a player that's proven to be healthy, that's proven to be successful, your routine individually is what your routine is. And there's a way, there's a line of order how that all goes. You know, the young guys get in there early, they do all their things early. So, you know, those prime time slots to get in the training room, to get in the batting cage before the game, you have to leave those spots open closer to game time for a guy like Manny, for a guy like Juan, to then come in there. But as far as the each individual routine before the game, I think the players of Manny and Juan's status, they've earned that right to kind of prepare and get ready the way they've always done it.
All right, let's go to when you signed with the Padres, obviously the big deal. That was the biggest deal in Padres history at that time. Why did you come to San Diego? Was it the money? Did you really believe in the prospects coming up and what was happening in San Diego? Obviously living in Coronado, that's pretty nice. Why did you come to San Diego?
Yeah, to be honest with you, man, it was two opportunities and San Diego was the most money. So yes, that is the wholehearted true answer at first. as then when I signed the contract, then I go and look into the minor league system. I really, really do a deep dive on who the guys are coming up, on who they plan to build around. And it seemed really, really appealing to me because I was that young guy in Kansas City that we were the group of guys that were going to come up to the big leagues as a strong unit, as a strong minor league core, and change what's happening there. So for me, it seemed super appealing and really cool to be on the other end of that, to be one of those veteran guys, to come into spring training, to show Tatis, Urias, all these young stars that they have, to try and mold them into winners, into the right mentality, team baseball, and get these guys going so we can bring some success to San Diego. So that really was appealing to me. That was my opportunity. That was the only opportunity I had. I then said, okay, we're going to do this. We're going to change this culture. We're going to win. And that was a big appealing factor to me, was I get to work with some of the best young guys in this game. The first year or two might be a little rough, but I think the end result can be very, very good.
All right, so we know about what happened your time with San Diego. 3.6 baseball reference war in 596 games with the Padres. Why didn't it work here? Like, were you actively trying to change things when things were not going your way? Because that's another criticism as well, that, oh, Haas, he just got his money and he's fine with just doing what he's doing. He wasn't trying to do things differently. He was not working. I think I saw this. He wasn't doing the extra work defensively, and he was just there just cashing in the checks.
Yeah, no, that's certainly not it. You know, I think as a player, we're always trying to get as good as we can. We're always trying to get better and better and better each year. I think, honestly, one thing that really, really hurt me was coming over and trying to pull the baseball, trying to get the ball in the air. I think, to me, the way that my swing was best was going left center, hitting line drives, being that type of guy. I then realized the game was turning in a certain way to where if you want to be successful and you want to be at the top in this game, you got to learn how to hit the ball in the air. You got to hit pull side balls in the air. That is the most successful way to do it. I think that from trying to pick that up, I think it took away a little bit of that opposite field, the swing really staying through the zone a long time. I think I then started kind of rolling over stuff, trying to create lift. Yeah. So I think that really set me behind the eight ball as far as the production side of it. The BFW war stuff you just brought up, I don't really know too much about those numbers. I would imagine they won't be very good. But at the end of the day, I just didn't perform the way I wanted to. And was there other stuff that added to it? I don't know. I'm not going to sit here and make those excuses saying that's the reason why. I just didn't perform the way I wanted to. It didn't happen. It sucked. But the effort was there. You know, I was doing everything I can to try and make it work. You know, Matt Caesar and I in St. Louis, we went to a hitting coach at 11 o'clock in the morning to try and figure stuff out. So we were always working. We were always trying to figure out ways to make it right and to make it successful as a team and individually. But at the end of the day, I can definitely say I did not perform on the field the way I wanted to. And that's really all there is to it. There's no excuses to that one way or another.
That's what I love about this is the opportunity here with accountability. Like, Padres fans, they were so passionate, right? And I think we just want to hear when Padres players don't live up to the money that we're never going to see in our lifetimes. We want to hear that accountability. And like Xander Bogaerts, how he saying like trash his beginning of his season, like the accountability there, I think it just goes such a long way. And so we just love to hear that. And hopefully Padres fans are going to respect you for you saying what you just said there. And what you're doing now, again, like I tweeted the other day, because some fans will get at me because, oh, you're giving love to Haas now. Well, no, I like what he's doing. This is great for baseball.
You like the content? I hope you do. I hope you like the
love
content
it.
And all that.
Love it. Entertainment great. From the player perspective. I'm a Padre fan, so I'm not listening to the Mookie Betts show. His might be great. But like this, I love it. So I think that they need more of it. And you talked about other sports as well. Yeah, like that's amazing. And when you're telling these stories and you're having Toddy and you're having Pro and you're having Manny and other guys on your show and tell these stories that we don't know about, like Ha-Sung Kim ripping cigs in the dugout, like we don't know about that. And that was like the thing of yesterday. Like everyone was so excited about that episode and we were laughing our butts off about it. Like, we need more of that. So hopefully Padres fans appreciate that.
Oh, man, we're going to start seeing Padre fans bust out rally heaters in the sixth inning when Ha-Seong Kim comes up to hit. Yeah. But one of the things you just said there, Ben, I want to touch on both of them. First, we will touch on this after, is the accountability thing, because I truly believe that, yes, the players, there is a lot of accountability on the players' behalf, as there should be. The front office stuff, I don't think there's as much accountability as there should be in the game today. So let's take Xander, for instance. Xander's in the first, second month of a 10-year deal. He has a very solid year his first year in San Diego. Probably not the year that people envisioned him being a superstar shortstop. Coming from Boston, you probably want him in those top five, top 10 MVP numbers. But the guy had a pretty solid year. We then move to the second year. We're in May. He gets off to a bad start. That's where, to me, I would challenge the fan base. I would challenge the fans to stick it out for the long run. Baseball is such a patient sport for players, fans, everybody. When you acquire somebody for, say, a 1 year for the season, you are acquiring them to produce over 162 games. So if it doesn't happen in April, doesn't happen in first couple weeks of May, I challenge you to give it time. In my situation personally, it was 4 years. The fans didn't like what I was doing on the field. I got traded. I get it. That's 4 years. It's more than enough time to figure it out, produce, make yourself on the team, on the starting spot, a roster, boom. So that's the stuff to me where it's like, okay, Xander's getting crushed right now because he got off to a slow start. Every single player does. You know, at some point in time during the season, you're going to go through a 2-for-20. You're going to go through a 5-for-30-something. Like, you're going to go through those bad stretches. So again, that's where the accountability side comes in, to where the players are accountable, and they should be. They're getting paid a lot of money. They're paid to produce and perform. But then where does the accountability come from the front office? Where does the accountability come from those other angles? And to me, I think that's a big mystery that a lot of fans don't really know about, specifically San Diego.
Yeah. What do you think about AJ Preller, your time with the Padres? And it just seems like he never sleeps. He's always around. Now, beginning of your tenure, I don't think he was always around because he was scouting a lot. But just what did you think overall of AJ? Were there things that you, moves that you agreed with, disagreed with? Definitely the managers going from Andy Green to Jace Tingler. I wonder how that went among you guys in the clubhouse, going from inexperience to inexperience again. And you had to wait all the way till 2022 to get Bob Melvin in.
Yeah, so I think the inexperience hire to inexperience, I think that kind of speaks for itself. I think that's a want of control and want of what's happening down there in the dugout. And I think those two names, you have that type of control when they're your manager, especially when it comes down to someone and Ron Washington. I think all the players were like, man, we want Ron Washington. This is the guy we want. Make this happen. So I think that message was clear. What I will say now about the front office now, I think they are very good at identifying young talent. They go out there, they don't miss in drafts with Jackson Merrill. They don't miss with the free agent signings internationally with the young catcher they have. What I would question is how do they fit making a big league team? And I think that's something that's lacking in the front office there. I think they make big, sexy moves. I think when you go and offer, and first of all, let me explain to you this. A lot of GMs don't have the benefit of having an absolute savage of an owner like Peter Seiler. May he rest in peace. Because Peter Seiler says, hey, this is your team. This is an open checkbook. Go out and get who you want to get. You try and go get Aaron Judge, it doesn't work. You try and go get Trey Turner, it doesn't work. You land on Xander Bogaerts, that's a great sign. There's not a lot of GMs that have that opportunity to go out there and try and pick every single player like that. So with that being said, you got to understand in a big league season that you need depth. You need to know how to build a team. Yes, those free agent signings are huge. They're sexy. It sounds good. It sounds like, man, this guy went out and did this. He went and did this. But at the end of the day, you got to know throughout the course of 162-game season, if you only have four or five starting pitchers that have been proven in this league for a while, stuff happens, injuries happen. You need to make sure that you have depth. You need to make sure you have quality AAA up and down big league guys that can come fill in, make the starts when they need to. Because to me, when the injuries happen, there's a big gap. There's a big drop in production. You go from superstar status to maybe a guy in Double A that's not ready to go right now. And it's not fair to that player because he's getting put in a situation that he might not be ready for. So to me, that's the one thing that I really would question with the front office is their knowledge of how to build a major league team and what that consists of. Because in my opinion, that's kind of what's lacking. And that last year is something that really hurt them in not making the playoffs.
Is AJ, in your experience, has he been someone that has gotten your input or Manny's input, the vet's input on what would a certain move do to the clubhouse? What would a managerial hiring do to a clubhouse? Because I haven't been in there, but it seems like that would be an important thing. So has AJ done that? Like, is that in his history?
I think that stuff's happened. I would say that's happened to then check a box and let your boss know, hey, I went and did this. But at the end of the day, I think it's the front office's plan to do something a certain way. And I don't know, it could be different with Manny. It could be different with Toddy, but I can speak on my personal experience. And I think the front office wants to do it the way that they're going to do it. And I don't really think they're taking much advice from anybody but themselves.
Do you think that in 2021, Jace Tingler did lose the clubhouse? Because there's a lot of stuff out there about that, obviously. Was that actually happening there during that collapse?
Yeah, listen, I don't want to sit here and bash Tingler and do that kind of thing. To be completely honest with you, I'm not a fan at all because of experience. And I think I've earned or I have that right to not be a fan because of some of the experiences that I went through. But in fairness to him, I think he was in a position that he just wasn't ready for. I think he was getting a lot of it from the front office. I think he was getting a lot of it from the players. I think he was getting a lot of it from the media outside. And I don't know if he truly knew how to juggle all that stuff. So I really do feel for him at the end of the day, because I think it's a situation that, man, when you're getting it from all different type of angles, when you're instructed to do certain things you really don't truly believe in, then it's hard. It's hard to become, it's hard to really have the clubhouse at that point in time. You know, I've had a lot of conversations with Jace to where when you're talking about manager to player, especially a veteran type player, you would just hope that he's being open and honest with you. And there's been a lot of times where I felt that wasn't the case. So maybe that's why I'm not a big of a fan or as big of a fan as I should be of him. But at the same time, I definitely think that, he was put in a really tough position, and it's hard to succeed when you're kind of under the guidelines and restrictions that he was.
Yeah, and look what he's doing now in Minnesota under Rocco Baldelli. It seems like things are going well there. So sometimes, I mean, I'm obviously haven't been in that dugout, but it feels like some guys are fit for certain roles. And then when they're not in that role, you can see some things not go in the direction that we all obviously wanted it to go in.
At the end of the day, man, you're hiring someone to go and do their job. What I admired about Ned Yost in Kansas City was, whoever the pitching coach was, they were hired to then go and run the pitching operation, and he had full trust in them to do that. You know, there was a lot of people, coaches, players, older players, younger players, there's been a lot of people that have rolled through that organization and, in my opinion, haven't had that opportunity to do things the way they've known how to do, and it sucks, and it's unfortunate because a lot of those people are out of the game right now, and they certainly don't deserve that.
Yeah, all right. Let's get to the last couple questions here, some fun ones, because obviously that was a lot of serious and talking. Hopefully, again, Padres fans respect me going at Haas like this and giving these questions, and Haas with the accountability and him coming back and giving his great opinion, and not just opinion, but his knowledge of what happened there in these situations. Because I know Haas, like, I have so much respect for you coming on and doing this, because a lot of Padres fans are just so passionate about what happened in those years, obviously. Let's get to, so the Ha-Sung Kim story there in that last episode. Everyone, go check it out. I did post a video on it on my socials, and then the links there, the social media channel to follow them is there as well. You've got to have another cool clubhouse story. Maybe it's not about Kim, but like Profar, obviously that guy just seems like the best guy ever. Toddy or Manny, like Greg Garcia, he's had a story about, you know, Manny, it didn't seem like he was going to play one day. He was on the treatment table like 10 minutes before the game, and there you go, boom, he's playing. That's just how he is. But do you have any story that sticks out there that hasn't been told?
Ah, man, I wish you would have asked me this before we came on, because I could have thought of something good. Okay. But the main thing is Kim, man. Ha-Sung Kim, this dude is so cool. When he came over his first year, I remember the first day in spring training, he made an appointment that first morning to go up with Leo, his translator, to every single player, talk to him for 2-3 minutes, introduce himself, get to know everybody. So Kim is somebody that I love that the fans love him, and I really do love that they have a huge appreciation for him because, man, he, as far as foreign players, he's one of the coolest I've ever gotten to play with. And in the situation that he's first accustomed to, of him coming to a different country, not speaking the language, the way he handled all that type of stuff, it was just, it was something I really admired from afar and next to him for many of years.
Another thing about in the clubhouse, so I don't know if fans know this, but you were an Adidas guy, Manny obviously with Jordan and Toddy. Oh my gosh, this guy with his cleats this year. Holy cow, last year as well. I love the Padre Tony Gwynn ones that he has. Yes. The Peter Seidler ones as well. Those are so nice. But in the clubhouse, during seasons, how much stuff do you guys get from Adidas, Nike, Jordan, whatever brand you're with, especially when you're like Eric Hosmer or you're Manny Machado? How much of that is coming in for you guys?
Man, for Toddy and Manny, it's unbelievable. There's two empty lockers in between where they're at, and it's always filled to the top with boxes, with shoes. Manny's the reason why I truly stopped trying to make nice cleats because I knew I could never compete with any of his Jordan cleats.
Yeah, no way, yeah.
It's just like, don't even try. Just get the standard stock Adidas cleats. Send me the all white. Send me the grays for the road, and we're good to go. Another cool thing that I just remember with Toddy, the way that Toddy went from a young prospect, which we've all been around in the game, to an actual superstar, a worldwide superstar, was unbelievable to see because I'll never forget, it would be after games, he'd come up to me and he'd show me his phone and it'd be a direct message on Instagram and it's like Steve Aoki and he's like, hey man, big fan, keep it up. And he's like, Papa, who is this? I'm like, what? Are you serious? Like he had so many big time celebrities reaching out, showing him love, saying how they're fans. That was really one of the coolest things for me was to see that transformation of Toddy being this young prospect to a global superstar like he is now.
Did you hang on, by the way, let's give some love to the clubbies, those guys that worked butts off all year long for you guys and making your lives easier, the coaching staff, all that, because I don't want that to go unnoticed. But for you, did you have any of those like big stars? Like who is that biggest guy where you were like, holy cow, this guy reached out to me. He knows who I am. Did you have that moment in your career?
Man, I don't, not as much as Toddy did, dude. I will tell you that, you know, we had some people in Kansas City that would reach out after we won, you know, Paul Rudd, Rob Riggle, those guys that are from that area. But yeah, I think I'm blindsided by all of the Tatis stuff because that was certainly cool. And you bring up the Padres, the support staff, the clubhouse guys, the traveling secretary, TJ and TJ Laidlaw, the clubbies. Those guys are unbelievable, man. Those guys are the best in the game, in my opinion. Those guys helped me through some tough times where, you know, they're working for the organization. They don't have to help me and talk to me and consult me like they did. And not even from a working relationship. It was just friend to friend on, man, I need someone to talk to. I need someone to bounce this stuff off because, you know, there was times where I would walk into the food room and it's nothing against any of the players, but there's talk that's happening on the TV of me getting traded possibly somewhere. So I walk into a room and like three different conversations are stopping and I'm like, man, this sucks. Like I'm causing all awkward. This stuff because they don't want me like to hear what's being said. So there was plenty of times where, you know, I went up to each and one of those clubhouse traveling support guys I was telling you about. And I'm like, man, I need someone to talk to, man. I feel like I'm a distraction here. I don't like this. And those guys got me through some tough times. And those are guys I still talk to this day. A lot of them were at my wedding when I married my wife, Case. And those relationships will never break. And I truly do love those guys. So I'm glad you gave those guys a shout out. That was a good call.
Yeah, they deserve it. Yeah. All right. Eric Hosmer, thank you so much. Like this means so much. Talking Friars podcast and YouTube show. Padres fans, hopefully you guys enjoyed that conversation. You respect Eric for what he said here today. And you'll check out his podcast that he has with Moonball Media, Digging Deep. Just a great show there. I think just great perspectives as well. So, Eric, thank you so much, man.
Cool. Thanks, Ben.